Just about 21 minutes past the hour, it being a Tuesday morning, Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist, a vigneron, that means he grows grapes and makes wine, and he's a member of the board of Creation Moments. And Don, how's Tuesday treating you so far?
Well, it's been, so far, rather uneventful.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's early yet. Lots could happen, you know.
Do you have a new phone?
Do I have a new phone?
Yes, do no. You have a new phone?
David, Don's cell phone is his pride and joy. I've seen his cell phone. He has more fun apps on his cell phone than anybody I know. But David.
Oh, no. Steve Schwartz has all of the apps.
Yeah, Steve, another friend
He's
of Creation.
He's the guy with
Moments.
The apps. Boy, oh, boy. I was conned into a, well, let's see, I was talked into a new phone. But that's a long story.
Yeah,
I thought maybe there was a, it was something nationwide that they were ganging up on everyone, especially old white guys.
Well, David was talking earlier about his SIM card apparently belonged to somebody else that they put on his phone. And because it didn't match his phone, they terminated some services. And as for my part, I got a call from Verizon the other day that said, in essence, we noticed that you've paid for your phone. Isn't it time for another one? And I would say, but it ain't broke. I mean, yeah, why?
So
we thought maybe that you
not
were being
broke. Why fix it?
Yeah. We talk about creation and science and faith and Genesis and actually lots of different aspects of that whole. I don't want to call it a dichotomy because science and faith really go together. Honest science and real faith belong together because both have to do with truth. But Don found an article here, and I was scanning this thing this morning, and this is interesting. Here's a scientist with the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He's a geoscientist named Oliver Chaner. And apparently he was embarked on a mission to prove global warming. And he was looking for carbon dioxide in the Earth's crust. And apparently there are a lot of academic institutions that are encouraging scientists and climatologists to go prove the climate change theory. So that's what he was responding to what's going on in his trade. Tell us what he did find.
Well, he found diamonds.
Hmm. Well, that's pretty close.
But it wasn't that he found diamonds, because he looked at diamonds and found water in the diamonds. So he got all excited about that. Because that basically told him that there is a bunch of water under the crust of the Earth. And so, you know, he thought he really discovered something. And in fact, he did. I mean, there is other scientists that have determined that there's more water under the crust, under the Earth, if you will, than there is on top of the Earth. As a matter of fact, by a factor of two, but he has now given us more evidence for that in his recent study. Even though he was looking for climate change, what he actually found was just reinforcement of the biblical model that we know that the flood, of course, happened. Genesis tells us that the waters came from above, but they also came from the deep.
Yeah, that's been a mysterious phrase in my mind for a long time. Fountains of the deep. Now, in the language and the logic system of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, how people would have described this, especially looking back on it, let's assume for a moment that Genesis was written about 500 B.C. during the Babylonian captivity, somewhere in there, 500, 600 B.C., and they were looking back at the creation story that Moses had laid down. They described it as the fountains of the deep broke forth, and that sounds kind of mystical, kind of poetic, kind of unscientific. Apparently now science is discovering that that's exactly what it was.
Well, that's right. It's there is water under the under the crust and under the mantle, as we've now discovered. And it seems like the more we look, the more we find, and the more the evolutionist, or in this case, here's a person that's trying to prove global warming, is, you know, happening upon a very basic premise that there was and is still a lot of water under the crust. And if you go back to Genesis 1, you know, verse 3, it basically says that the earth, you know, was formed by water first. And then, I mean, the our globe, our earth, and then the seas were gathered together and dry land appeared. Well, if dry land appeared out of the seas, then the sea was there before the dry land was there, before God formed the dry land. And so we should expect then to find a lot of water in the earth, in, you know, deep inside the earth. And that's exactly what this article finds.
Yeah, but we routinely think of water as flowing, you know, pools of water, volumes of water running through fissures under the earth. We would call them aquifers. But those are very superficial. We're talking about the earth's crust, which is 10 miles thick and below that. And who would have thunk it that there was water down there in those temperatures and under all that pressure?
And but the water is in different is in a different form. It actually is bound up with other minerals, and so it's not free flowing as you know we would expect, for example, in an aquifer or in we've got many many caves in the earth. We recently heard of one that some boys and the coach got trapped in. And those are on the surface or you know, hundreds of feet below below the earth's surface. But the water that has been discovered here is called water 7, actually, which is bound up water. And so when the diamonds are formed and they pass through this water-rich mineral area, they actually get under the pressure. The water is forced into a diamond, if you can imagine that. The diamond being one of the hardest substances we know here on Earth, so it's got to be tremendous pressure, and therefore the water now is entrapped in the diamond, and that of course is brought up to the surface, and we discover it, and we say aha. So that's what Shawner found, and it's not just, you know, you would think, okay, maybe one place, you know, the diamonds from one place probably have this, but this is all over the globe. I mean, it's been found in China, to Botswana, to the Republic of South Africa, basically anywhere where diamonds have been found have now been verified to have you know, some water in them. And it's an interesting, you know, the more we look in science, in the more it corroborates the biblical history. And regardless of what we're looking at, whether it's here geology you know, looking at diamonds, for example, unexpected find to find some water, which then corroborates the biblical model of how we came about and how God actually transmitted to us that how the earth was formed, or whether it's in any other field, it corroborates what the biblical history states in not only Genesis but in other parts of Scripture. Why then should we question that the Bible is not accurate? When it doesn't give us a scientific, you know, mathematical explanation of things, but in general, it gives us enough information that when we come across some scientific data, we can say, aha. Okay, well, this matches the biblical record. It doesn't match anything that we previously thought about evolutionary history of the Earth, for example, that the Earth was just a molten glob that got shot off from a sun, and therefore, you know, didn't have any water whatsoever, and then captured the water, you know, from other places, but that the Earth was indeed once water. And the other thing, not in this article, but has been talked about, for example, at the Institute of Creation Research, is the finding of the magnetic field. Not that that we found the magnetic field, but there is a magnetic field around the Earth, and we know that the magnetic field is degrading over time. And we can chart that, and then we can chart how far back you need to go before the magnetic field is so strong that it wouldn't support life. And when you do that, you find out that, oh, gee, you can't go back more than 10,000 years, otherwise there's no life whatsoever. There's been different models as to why the magnetic field is there in the first place. And the only model that really makes sense is the one done by a creation scientist who said that the Earth was at one point water, and from the water being a dipole, having a small magnetic field, if you will, a small magnet, that water spinning in a certain way then generated the initial magnetic field of the Earth, and not only of the Earth, but also of the other planets that have been analyzed in this way. So it's the only, if you assume that the Earth started with water and the other planets started with water, then you can come up with a very, very reasonable explanation as to the magnetic field of the Earth and the other planets as well. So this idea, this concept that water should be indeed deep within the Earth is important to our understanding about Earth's history, but we don't have to go too far to at least understand that, well, you know, God said that the Earth was formed with water, so why shouldn't we find a lot of water under the crust? And that's indeed what apparently we are finding in these recent studies.
Well, I love it when science has a big collective aha moment. You mentioned that word, and it just tickles me when science has thought and thought one way for years and years, maybe decades, maybe generations, but certainly years or decades, and then all of a sudden some discovery surfaces, and they all go, aha, we was wrong. And that to me is what science is all about. It's revising what you thought you knew to begin with. And hopefully science is taking a look at this new discovery and the other supporting discoveries. It goes back about 2014, the last 3-4 years, scientists have been developing this idea and finding evidence of vast oceans of water locked up in the minerals underneath the Earth's crust, that science as a whole is revising its thinking. But if they've ruled out the Bible as relevant, it's irrelevant, it's mystical, it's not scientific, are they taking a look at that? Are there scientists out there that are saying, hey, putting two and two together and actually getting four? Are they buying this?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. The scientists that are doing that are the Christians, the creation mm-hmm. scientists. They're the ones who are you know, putting this information together and saying, okay, yep, this corroborates you know, the biblical record. So just gives us, the more you look, it doesn't matter whether you're a Christian or not, the more you look, the more evidence you're going to find that supports the Bible. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that, you know, more people, more of the more scientists don't start from the saying that the biblical record is a history, so I'm going to use that to help support either my theories about what happened or help support my research, and so that I can see that, yes, indeed, this is accurate, or it even, you know, may help me guide me in some new field that, you know, others haven't looked at because they don't start with the right assumption. So we can waste a lot of time in science and waste a lot of time with foolish hypotheses if you don't understand that there is a biblical basis, mainly from a historic perspective, that is quite useful in our not only in our new discoveries, but in trying to understand how the Earth was formed, how the universe was formed, and what our role is in this this whole cosmos that we live in. It would save us a whole lot of trouble if more and more scientists would start from that perspective, as opposed from the perspective, well, we can't, you know, we can't look at the Bible because it's you know, it's religion. We don't want to have religion in our schools, so we gotta eliminate that. But it's not religion. I mean, it's a history.
Well, yeah, there's another aspect to that too. Spiritual aspects and religious aspects aside, if they just look at the Bible as knowledge developed over centuries by the people who've gone before us, and it's presented to us as history, to disregard that seems to be less than bright. You know, it's a slam. It's to disregard the intellect of all those people that believe this and pass the story down to us is a profound sign of disrespect, I think.
Well, it's arrogance is what it is.
Yes,
it's good basically word. Arrogance to say that, you know, I know better than the silly book, the Bible, that, you know, people are talking about. And it not only affects earth science that we're talking about here, but it affects anthropology. I mean, you know, where did man come from? And where did he start off from? Where did, you know, where are all the origins of man? Where did they start off from? Well, all you have to do is read Genesis, and it tells you exactly where man came from. And so maybe you should start your research from that area as opposed to just looking all over the earth and finally figuring out, oh, well, according to our mitochondrial DNA, our ancestors came from Africa. Well, you didn't quite hit the mark. You got close, but you didn't hit the mark from that perspective. I mean, we know, for example, there are four rivers that are described in Genesis chapter 2 where the garden was, which was east of Eden, and we have a pretty good idea now where that was, and it's, you know, in Iraq, and you know, the Tigris and Euphrates rivers are still there. Are they in the exact location they were before the flood? I don't know, but they're called the same thing, so they're probably pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, you know, we can start from there and then look at the migration of man and what caused the migration. Well, it was the Tower of Babel. So where was the Tower of Babel? Well, it's in Babel. It's in Iraq. And all of man, you know, was dispersed from that one location. So there's a lot of information that is contained within the Bible that is accurate and that we can rely on because, one, it's God's word. But, two, the more we look, the more we find that corroborates the Bible as opposed to other theories about where man came from and how he migrated, and in this case, you know, water under the rocks, under the mantle and everything. We should start there, but we continue to want to have our own say and be arrogant about it and not say that there's a creator who I am accountable to. I want to only be accountable to myself.
It's about submission. That's what everything seems to boil down to, submission to what we know in our hearts is the truth. And it has to do with the way we tend to organize knowledge. You need some kind of structure, some sort of pattern, some places to put tidbits of research so that you build an edifice of your own. But to disregard the one that was built by those whose shoulders we're standing on seems to me profoundly disrespectful. And it's just an interesting story, interesting discoveries here. And lots of good things can come from this if people just pay attention and put two and two together. Don Clark, biochemist and vigneron and good friend of the station from Garden Valley, Texas. And I want to point out the Creation Moments website to you, Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments. It's creationmoments.com. And there's a wealth of information there in the form of articles and even blogs and videos that tell the scientific story behind biblical creation, how science and biblical truth just naturally, and I say naturally, even supernaturally, go together, complement one another. Don, thanks very much for checking in with us today. We'll look forward to next Tuesday.
Oh, you're quite welcome, and you folks have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Don.